explore the little things that can inspire us all. I'm Hanif Abdurraqib. Listen to Small Joys, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The first recorded instance of the derogatory OK Boomer meme appeared in a Reddit comment in January 2009. Since then, the broad brushstroke put down of the baby boomer generation, that is those born between 1946 and 1964, has become part of everyday lexicon. The same derision for older Americans was captured in an April 2021 Saturday Night Live musical parody.
Baby boomers, greatest generation. Got all the money, now we got the vaccination. Crash the economy three whole times. When it comes to the vax, we the first in line.
There's no shortage of other old age stereotypes, something that local and national arts groups are working to change. Margaret Morgenroth Gallett is an internationally known cultural critic in age studies and the author of numerous books, including the 2017 title Ending Ageism, or How Not to Shoot Old People. She is a resident scholar at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. And it's great to be back in Columbus virtually. Exactly. But I was there in 2004. I was registering voters and people were so kind. It was a wonderful time of my life.
Well, come back anytime, but glad to have you here virtually for now. Columbus-based filmmaker Gabrielle Burton took on the ageism in the short-form comedy series Old Guy, which starred her late parents. She is producing an upcoming Columbus art event titled OK Boomer is Not OK. Check WOSU.org/allsides for the details on that. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ann. It's great to be here.
Gabrielle, what about that skit from
SNL
and the message it's conveying?
I think that the problem with OK Boomer is that it can touch on something that's funny and that can be enjoyable, but it's ultimately saying that an entire part of our population is dismissible, and all of the contributions that the boomer generation has done, it's simplifying it into something that it really just isn't. So, for instance, the idea that they're taking all the vaccinations is simply not true. And it's actually part of the problem has been 20-somethings who aren't getting vaccinated or who weren't interested in that. The idea of crashing the economy is much more complex. And then, you know, issues like the environment. It's obviously boomers who have led the environmental movement, who pushed it to where it is today. And so those things just end up being thrown out the window when you use an expression like OK Boomer to dismiss all the contributions that a generation has made.
It's, you know, Margaret, I'm wondering about your thoughts on this and the fact that I don't know. I mean, things changed about how we regard older people in our society, or maybe not. Maybe it's always been like this. What do you think?
Let me just go back to OK Boomer for a second.
Sure.
Because it's really, it encapsulates a whole lot of recent history, which is a political attack on the boomers. And it got worse during COVID. What happened is that by March of 2020, OK Boomer, which was said with a sort of dismissive sneer, became Boomer Remover. Boomer Remover. That's who they thought was dying. And these were gleeful hashtags and comments on Twitter. And they came to a crescendo in March and April of 2020. So I think when we're trying to make a progress story out of creativity and aging, or just out of, you know, the countering the decline narrative, we have to realize that things can get worse, and really quite a lot worse, before they get better. So I know this show is about countering the ageism in the culture. I would go back. You can trace the anti-boomer material to the 80s, when boomers started to be called aging boomers, even though the youngest of them were very young. They were in their 20s. Mm-hmm. But if you look for the reason, I think what the right wing has needed is a scapegoat for the fact that the American economy has become extremely divided unequally. And if you look at the boomers, a lot of them are very poor. They don't have enough money to go into retirement. They'll outlive the money that they do have. So the idea that Saturday Night Live put on people dressed up as older people in ridiculous ways to attack the boomers, many of those actors know the truth about their parents and grandparents in old age. They know that they are poor. Some of them may have relatives in nursing homes. I mean, Saturday Night Live is often stupid about age because it's got a young demographic as its audience. And what we always ought to be doing is looking at the demographic that politics, or for that matter, museums, or, you know, Grant is 30 under 30. Look at the demographic that people are aiming for. And that tells you where the culture is putting, so to speak, its money.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That is Margaret Morgenroth Gillette. She's an internationally known cultural critic in age studies and the author of numerous books, including the 2017 title Ending Ageism or How Not to Shoot Old People. She is a resident scholar at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. Also with us, Columbus-based filmmaker Gabrielle Burton. She took on ageism in the short-form comedy series Old Guy. We talked about that a few years ago, which starred her late parents. She is producing an upcoming Columbus art event called OK Boomer Is Not OK. Check out the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides to learn more about that, because it's coming up. Gabrielle, how did the arts play into all of this? And when we talk about the arts, I guess, I mean, you know, Old Guy was more about who we see on television, which is a huge funneler of pop culture, arts or not. And it was really interesting, the nuances of that. But what are the arts and how do they get involved in all of this?
I think as film, as one of the arts, is such a powerful, or television as well, such a powerful art medium to express representation. And we see this, you know, this is a huge discussion now about representation and what are we representing. And it's this, it goes the same for other media, for visual arts, for, you know, who is represented on stage and what are they represented as. You look at a thing like SNL, who are comics and what is their fodder that they're using? And how is age being playing into that material? Is it used as a punchline? Is it used as a stereotype in the context of talking about younger people? Are you actually representing older people within all of these art forms, dance, music, stage arts, and in galleries? And so the inspiration for this event was thinking, well, what if, you know, if I could gather people together to talk about this discussion and gather artists who might not otherwise be put in the same room together, and to be introducing people to both arts and an intellectual discussion in the sort of old-fashioned salon type of events. And so while Goose Creative came on board, Greater Columbus Arts Council and Puffin Foundation West and supporting it, and I think it's going to be really an interesting conversation and something that then will reverberate out to have people in different forms of art thinking about what they might have internalized on ideas of ageism, and as well as what active steps we can all take to be more inclusive or just mindful about the choices we're making in art.
You know, the ageism, the idea of ageism goes back to the likes of Sigmund Freud, the Jean Piaget, you know, the Swiss child psychologist, who wrote that development stopped in young adulthood and then slowly eroded. And that kind of we've learned, I mean, we know categorically that the brain is elastic. It is, continues to grow. It can change. We are having a hard time culturally catching up to that. Right, Margaret?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. One of the ideas that I think we're still dealing with in some ways goes right back to that Freud era that you mentioned. Creativity declines with age. That was the theory at the time. And it was based actually on an endocrine theory. And it meant that as your endocrine, as your hormones declined, you would lose both sexual power and creative power. That was an extremely detrimental idea. And it lasted and lasted. It lasted in psychoanalysis, it lasted in medicine. And then we have an anti-ageism movement that begins, I think, in the post-war period, after the Second World War, but it's very slow getting going. But neurogenesis is the concept that you mentioned. Neurogenesis says, oh, brain cells don't necessarily decline with age. We also get new synapses. We make new connections as we get older. Now, neurogenesis took, let's say it took 80 years to make its way through the morass of ageism that sexual science had created. You have to explain why it took so long. Well, ageism is the short answer. People in science couldn't see that the brain could change because they had this idea that it deteriorated. So, I mean, we're in a wonderful new phase, I think, which is where people are more open to the idea that of ageism. For one thing, I mean, I love Gabrielle's concept of the salon, and I hope everybody there either knows Old Guy or will see some fragment of Old Guy.
We'll put a link on our website. Yeah, absolutely.
Good, because it's a wonderful series. I've recommended it to people in the age studies field, and I think many people show it or parts of it. And one of the things that her father, as the old guy, he's looking for jobs and he can't get them as anything but the old guy, these stereotypical representations. I mean, we do have to look seriously at representation. My own field in representation is actually the novel. And so I'd love to talk about a couple of novels that I really think help us along in thinking about the powers of later life.
Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, I'm thinking, first of all, of a novel that some people may know because of the film version. I discovered Paulette Giles' News of the World before the movie was made. And it is an absolutely wonderful novel.
Yeah.
About an old man. Well, he's not that old. He's a whole lot younger than I am. He's 70 and he's still quite strong. And he takes as a responsibility delivering a child. She's a white child, but she was kidnapped by the Kiowa. And he's returning her to her home.
And this is post-Civil War era, by the way. This is post-Civil War.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. You know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh yeah.
You know it. It is brilliant about the history of America in Texas. In the Reconstruction was ending, and it was an extremely volatile, dangerous time to be crossing Texas, particularly with a girl child of about 11 or 12 years old. And Tom Hanks was really very good in the movie, and so was the child. But the novel is better. And it's better in ways that only novels can be, meaning that you know more about the interior life of the older character, but also because one major scene in which he is fighting off enemies with the help of the child is simply better done in terms of narrative suspense. In the novel rather than the movie. Mm-hmm. So that's just one example of a marvelous, a brilliant book that has enabled, one of many that has enabled the culture to find older representations, representations of older characters that you want to live with, you right. want to get to know them, and you admire them.
And I think that by reading that book, it's you don't feel like you're reading a book about what it was like to be an older person. It's about a time and a place and how this person is intersecting with that at a particular age. It could have been, and I guess the 12-year-old as well. So, yeah, it's not preachy In other words,
exactly.
It's just an incredible story that happens to be about, and it's very telling. We're going to take a quick break. That's Margaret Morgenroth Gallet. She's an internationally known cultural critic and age studies, the author of numerous books, including the 2017 title Ending Ageism or How Not to Shoot Old People. I keep chuckling every time I say that, Margaret. And also with this Columbus-based filmmaker, Gabrielle Burton. She's on took on ageism in the short-form comedy series Old Guy, which starred her late parents. And by the way, we will put a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides, where we will also post a link so you can get more details about her upcoming Columbus art event called OK Boomer is Not OK. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The American Alliance of Museums has called on the museum community to change the narrative about aging in America. The landmark report published in June addresses ageism, the increasing population of older people, and a movement known as creative aging. The Ohio Arts Council is now offering creative aging training. Still with us is Margaret Morgenroth Gallet. She's a cultural critic in age studies and the author of many books, including the 2017 title Ending Ageism or How Not to Shoot Old People. Columbus-based filmmaker Gabrielle Burton, who is producing an art event titled OK Boomer is Not OK. You can check out more about that at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Joining us, Jared Small of the Ohio Arts Council manages the Creative Aging Training Initiative, a project to serve the needs of older adults. Welcome, Jared Small.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So what is creative aging?
Good question. Creative aging. Think about aging creatively, really. We're talking about hands-on programming for older adults that are skill-based, sequential, and involved art making, really. So we're not talking about maybe like a performance or a poetry reading, but really getting into it and actually making art with older adults in collaboration with professional artists who are trained to do such a thing.
The intention being what?
Intention being building a social net for older adults. I think we were talking about convenings earlier on in the conversation, what it looks like to convene a room of older adults. Maybe they're working on some kind of theatrical performance. But the intention being, you know, getting those synapses firing, getting them talking amongst one another, collaborating with one another. The benefits are huge. And for the Ohio Arts Council's sake, we've been doing intentional creative aging programming since 2013. So this is not a new concept, but it certainly evolved over time. And I think we can all agree that the need for it is only becoming greater and greater as adults keep living longer, healthier lives. So we were talking about boomers earlier on. That's one good example, certainly, of the need for it right now.
You know, we were talking off the air, Gabrielle, about the proliferation of the 30 under 30 things and awards and the 40 under 40 and that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. What's the problem?
The problem is that I've always been curious that we reward achievements for people who have a lot of time to get those achievements. And it's about the potential that we think they might fulfill in the future. But I sometimes think, why are there not awards for, you know, 50 over 50 or 60 over 60 or 70 over 70 or 80 over 80?
Too many people for 70 over
70. Okay, maybe 8 over 80. But yeah. But the point is that if you're actually still playing piano really well at 40 years old, at 50, I mean, that's an incredible achievement. You're dealing with, you know, everything from maybe having family to paying taxes to dealing with paperwork to dealing with whatever else is happening in your life. And when your head gets so full of all of these things, people often joke, oh, I'm, you know, going senile or something. But really, it's that we actually just have more and more that we're keeping in our heads, and we're more elastic and more interesting. And I think that that's such an odd, subtle ageist approach in our culture, that we reward youth,
yeah,
a youthful achievement rather than rewarding achievement over time.
unless you're super famous like a Georgia O'Keeffe, right, Margaret Morgenroth Gillette?
Yes, I think that the exceptions are often what people would prefer to see. And certainly they are more numerous now. But I think every time we talk about a positive in the culture, we ought to be remembering how hard it is for all the others. I mean, I think in the film world, for example, or music, Madonna, the film world, Meryl Streep, Gina Davis, you could have a long list of actors, actresses, women mostly, who are saying, most of us can't work. We just don't get called. And if we get called, either we get called because we're going to play grandmothers or witches or, you know, some fatal kind of character, or it's going to be very minor. But basically, we don't get called at all. And so they've been saying, not with this hashtag, but they could use it, Oscars so young, as well as Oscars so black, I mean, so white, because we need that kind of message coming out to more and more people. So I love the idea that you can make people who are not celebrities feel that they have immense talent, or that they have talent, or that they can be creative, or that they can simply enjoy art making in later life. I know people who are doing this, and it's been wonderful. And it's happening. I hope we get to talk about nursing homes. Mm. It's been happening in nursing homes too.
You know, this whole idea that I can or I can't be creative starts at a very young age, though, doesn't it, Jared?
Mm, absolutely. Yes. Yes. I mean, to the point made earlier, oftentimes it's about being in the right circumstance, having access to private music lessons, for instance. But the fact of the matter is, and we were talking about it earlier, creativity doesn't necessarily go away. It might look different or manifest itself differently in how it's expressed by, let's say, older adults. But I think it's about offering opportunities to engage in it at whatever age you're at. I mean, we've seen TikToks, for goodness sake, of older adults whipping out some Chopin or Beethoven licks. I mean, my grandfather even could play Oh, Susanna on the harmonica until he was 94. So, you know, you're never too old, never too young is the phrase in music education to start somewhere or to engage in some kind of meaningful creative activity.
And the interesting thing about that is that on TikToks and stuff, I think what's interesting is we have to be mindful of approaching that as just the same creativity that you have at any age. There's a problem inherent when people start saying, oh, isn't that cute? You know, that old person dancing. And it's not, you know, that's just a person dancing and they're expressing their physicality, their sexuality, their whatever. And it doesn't change as you age. You're the same person. And hopefully we will all grow old, and this is all awaiting us. And so that's part of when we put that message out there of what are we expecting for our age as well, and want people to take to interpret us as.
Yeah, that's important to mention too. Is that we are all aging, we are all ageist.
Well, none of us are getting out of here alive.
Right. That's right.
And if you live a long life, you'll have to age along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I mean, it's one of those things where. We all have to confront it. You wake up every day, you have aged. And so this is relevant to everybody. And I think the more we can talk about it, and as you mentioned, representation, to look at it, but also frame it in a way that is productive and positive is also important.
We have an email here from Jen who writes, I am a Gen X, and my observation is that boomers and Gen Xers are very hard on millennials, saying they are lazy, entitled, etc. So the OK Boomer trend might be a defensive response to this. The us versus them thing, Margaret Morgenroth Gillette, that's, I don't know, has that been around a long time, the divisional, the camps?
I think the naming of the cohorts is one of the worst things that's happened to our culture. And we ought to get rid of all of those. Gen X, boomers, the whole, most of them have no basis in any historical fact or cultural fact. I mean, you can tell Gen X, we didn't know what to call it. You know, we just wanted to make a book about difference. And the intergenerational warfare has, as I tried to say earlier, it's been a way of explaining the growth of inequality and why, and why your kids are probably not going to do as well as you did if you're a certain age, and their kids are going to do even less well. That's assuming that this trend follows what has been happening since about 1980. So we've had 40 years in which the economy has declined for a good number of people. And whenever you want to talk about generations, I think you ought to talk about the politics of intergenerational warfare.
And the economics and how those intersect. And the issue is, you're saying, it's not the boomers. Maybe it's the CEOs who are making 500 times what their rank and file workers are earning. And this deflects from them by creating the intergenerational conflict.
There's always a pushback of older, of younger generations, or at least, let's say, since the boomers.
Some people would say, that pushback is always kind of a little bit healthy.
Yeah. You have to separate
yourself
from...
Cutting the apron strings.
Yes, exactly. And I think that, I was talking with a boomer who said, I think it's great that people are saying, okay, boomer, because that's what we said. We said, don't trust anybody over 40. The boomer generation said that kind of thing. And so... That boomer didn't see it as something that was insulting, but actually a healthy progression of, generation defining itself. The problem, as we continue talking about it, is that it's not used in a way of a healthy separation. It's done in a way of dismissive, of belittling, and of
discriminating. Isolating.
Yes. Then all these isms are interconnected. There is definitely a problem that we have socially that we can look at of... ageism, racism, sexism, all of these things are about simplifying one group into something that can be dismissed.
Right. Putting folks into buckets is kind of what it comes down to. What's interesting, though, is I hear us talk about this. It's language. It comes down to language and the fact that we do not have the appropriate language to talk about ageism or generational differences as we might have about other isms or differences in our world. And so part of this creative aging idea is to equip folks with the language to be able to talk to not just older adults, but everyone about the importance of this and knowing how to interact with folks who want to engage in a conversation or an activity or a program that is intended to address some of these outcomes. So language is important and it matters, especially in this case.
And so, Margaret?
Well, there's a play that appeared in the United States and in Canada and in Great Britain called The Children. And it's talking about intergenerational warfare. In this play, it's a cataclysm has occurred, and there's been a nuclear meltdown at a plant. And the donne of the play is that the three older people who are, I guess you'd call them boomers if you were still using that language, are supposed to sacrifice themselves by going into the nuclear plant and letting the younger people go. And the political point seems to be that they are expendable. Older people, they're only 65, but they're expendable, and the younger people ought to be allowed to live. So you have a play in which, of course, it's all language, as Jared was saying, but the point is that we should die. We should just die. And we deserve to die also is the subtext of the play, not so subtextual actually. We deserve to die because we didn't stop environmental warming, global weirdness, the fossil fuel industry. And Gabriel, objected to that already in a very sound way, but the play does not. I think there's a lot more. I was talking about boomer remover. Mm-hmm. I think that they should just disappear. We older people should just disappear.
And that came up during the COVID crisis.
Oh, absolutely.
Political proposals of, allowing it to happen and saying that's a sacrifice worth making, which is egregious.
Good point.
And
yes,
it takes away all of the sense of the economic, actually the fiscal strength that older generations actually bring in, either in the soft economy of childcare or in just the social richness, as well as creativity and these other things that, all generations bring
the
to the table.
The food banks almost collapsed because most of the people volunteering in them our older people who were more vulnerable.
Yeah, our economy actually is predicated on a huge amount of labor coming from an older generation.
Free labor.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the idea that that is an expendable resource is whack. So, you know, it would tank our economy to lose an entire generation.
Yeah, Jared?
I was just saying the creative economy, we cannot leave folks behind in the creative economy. And the arts specifically, they're meant for everybody. And I think what's interesting, it's a win-win. Anyone can tap into it, including older adults. And so when you mention the economy and soft skills and soft experiences, I think it's important to keep in mind that it's not up for debate. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. anyone can engage in it, and they should. And here's why they ought to do it. That's creative aging, and that's the creative economy.
I like how the Ohio Arts Council also is bringing this into something that's cross-generational, because that's a huge part that in research has shown is breaks down ageism that is also internalized ourselves. So if you're not interacting with older people, you start, we have those things of, oh, I'm still 29 this year.
Or 29, my seventh anniversary of
turning
29
What is that about? We should be, so lucky as to have our 50th, our 60th, our 70th. And so a big part of that internalized ageism comes from not interacting with people creatively, seeing that they're thriving. And so the Ohio Arts Council's effort of this, or in doing this event with Puffin Foundation and Greater Columbus Arts Council and Wild Goose Creative, they're seeing that need, these arts groups of gathering people across generations and having it be focusing on creativity continuing.
Intergenerational programming, it's important. It's happening in our schools here and there. But imagine the magic of what happens when a 12-year-old student is going to the local nursing home and they're engaging in, or they're learning together, a new dance that mm-hmm. they're doing. It's magical to watch. And the learning objectives and outcomes, it's just incredible. And I hope we see more of that in our schools. And then, kids and older adults aside, what about others, the caregivers, the grandchildren? What happens when you bring them into the mix as well? It's a totally different experience than for that older adult who's able to really not just prop up their social net, but to engage and fire those synapses that might not have been fired otherwise. It's important, and we talked about intergenerational warfare. but the opportunity there, though, to get them together in the same room is important.
You were also talking about how adults stop themselves creatively, right?
Right,
because that's what we've been conditioned to do. That's just been the theory that you can't learn anymore, you can't be creative. Margaret?
Well, I just want to bring in the nursing homes because we have, and the assisted living communities and the continuing care retirement communities, because the people who mostly get involved in these activities are community dwellers still. But there's a lot of this activity and art making that is going on in the good nursing homes, the ones that mostly are nonprofits and are unionized and that were safer for their people all during COVID. Mm. And in this connection, I want to bring up Anne Basting, whom some of you may have heard of. She is a MacArthur Fellow in theater, and she's in Milwaukee. And she has made a wonderful play. I think you can see it on YouTube, called Penelope. And it was professionally performed with people in nursing homes and their caregivers in the nursing homes. It took about 2 years to do the original production, but it can be carried around and done elsewhere. And Anne wrote it with people in nursing homes, including people with dementia and people with cognitive impairments, people in wheelchairs, worked on every aspect of the show. They worked on the story, which is about Penelope waiting for her husband, Odysseus, to come home from the war in Ithaca. And some of you know that it took him about 20 years to do it. Meanwhile, she is weaving something. And everybody who could weave or knit made a huge, long tapestry that was used in the play. And they taught them gesture, because one of the things you can do in a wheelchair is to move your arms rhythmically. And they learned some Greek And everybody, including many of the people with cognitive impairments, were able to learn Greek phrases of welcome that were used at the end to welcome Odysseus and the audience. And it's just an amazing production. And it's very interesting to hear Anne Basting talk about her work in her TED Talk. I just watched it again recently. And she is a brilliant creator and an enthusiast about bringing the arts, theater, dance, choreography, in particular music, to people who are not any longer in the community and usually not able to go to museums. So that's a whole other realm of creativity and later life that I think I'm glad we had a chance to explore it here.
Thank you. That's Margaret Morgenroth-Gallat. She's an internationally known cultural critic and age studies and the author of numerous books, including the 2017 title Ending Ageism or How Not to Shoot Old People. Also with us, Columbus-based filmmaker Gabrielle Burton, who took on ageism in the short-form comedy series Old Guy, which starred her late parents. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides, along with details about an upcoming event that she's producing, an art event called OK Boomer is Not Okay. And also with us, Jared Small, an arts learning coordinator at the Ohio Arts Council, where he manages the Creative Aging Training Initiative, a project to serve the needs of older adults. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about ageism and the arts today and how to foster creativity as you age. Still with us, Columbus-based filmmaker Gabrielle Burton. She took on the ageism in the short-form comedy series Old Guy. She is producing an upcoming art event called OK Boomer is Not Okay. See our website for more details about all of that. Jared Small is an arts learning coordinator at the Ohio Arts Council, where he manages the Creative Aging Training Initiative. It's a project to serve the needs of older adults. And Margaret Morgenroth-Gallat is a cultural critic in age studies and the author of many books, including the 2017 title Ending Ageism or How Not to Shoot Older People. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Margaret, the older population is growing. Ironically, the millennials are going to be the next biggest population coming down the pike, ironically, because the culture war or the ageism wars, but there is also a declining birth rate, and I'm wondering what impact that might have on ageism going forward, so how this works.
Well, I said earlier that I think we had eliminated some of the early 20th century hostility to older people by changing the science. So science changes regularly. It's not infallible, and fortunately, some of the scientists recognize that. I think we have two big problems ahead of us. One of them is the cult of youth. And I think we have talked a little bit about various manifestations of that, but I think Zuckerberg's Young People Are Smarter is an important encapsulation of that point of view, that people get, less capable cognitively as they get older. And then that youth is smarter, so the millennials may benefit for a while from that. But just parenthetically, no younger generation actually benefits from the cult of youth, because the goal is to cut wages for the middle-aged and older people. And it doesn't mean that your beginning salary goes up at all. So the cult of youth is not economically useful to young people, but it's very useful to some political entities and hides a multitude of economic and political sins. But what joins the cult of youth, and this is really the danger for the future, is the terror of Alzheimer's. Now, there are actually, Alzheimer's was also discovered about over 100 years ago by Dr. Alzheimer, and it's the one that has gotten worse. It hasn't gotten better as the science, because the science of curing it has not gotten better. So what has gotten better about Alzheimer's? Treatment has, that I don't mean medical treatment, I mean the culture of compassion and interventions that are like Ann Bastings interventions, where you try to talk to people who have cognitive impairments and you get to know them and you meet them at their cognitive level, which I think we all do automatically with people that we take as equals. I try to talk to anybody at a level I think they would understand, and not, you know, at talking below them, or, you know, talking in some highfalutin language that I've given up years ago. So I think that is that fear of Alzheimer's is the real danger. And so that's why I brought in the work with people with cognitive impairments in the nursing homes earlier. And I am hoping that this museum initiative will think about bringing people who are in these community settings now, because they are growing in popularity, and they have many benefits, but one of the demerits is that they do rather cut people off from anybody who is not in the cohort in that community,
right,
which could be 55 and up. So, you know, you've got people over a 5-decade span. It's not nothing, but they're not in touch with the museums, and they're not in touch so much, except outside of their family, they're not in touch with children and younger adults. So I'm excited about this, the potentials of this creative aging programs.
I think about, you know, we've talked about this before in the program, just music. Somebody who has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's or some kind of cognitive impairment, put a set of headphones on them, maybe they haven't, and just listening to a song from their, from a long time ago, from when they were younger, or maybe not even that. You know, it doesn't even matter, but it actually affects them and sort of can bring them back to life, for lack of a better phrase, or bring them back to the present a little bit more. And you just wonder what is going on. Not just people think about what's going on in their head or what are they thinking. I'm thinking about what's going on chemically in their head. What is, you know, actually chemically changing to trigger that kind of awareness and response and reaction. And I wonder if the same can be said for the other art forms, Jared.
I think so, yes. I mean, it's different for different folks, but, you know, plenty of stories out there of a guitarist playing something from the 1920s or 30s and the face of someone just lights up. And I've heard many stories of, be it music or the visual arts or something else, dance even, where you can tell something has turned on. But in terms of the science, I'm not so confident on that. I know it's there, though, certainly. And yes, all the arts have that ability to do something in that frame.
Actually, my brother-in-law, Anirudh Patel, works on this. He's written a book called Music, Language, and the Brain.
Okay, all right.
And so he does know the science
on
this.
It's a real thing.
Yes, yeah. And it actually is something about how the brain responds to music in a different way. And people who will lose the ability to speak language anymore can still sing language.
Yes.
So that's really fascinating. And he's you know, that's the area of his research. And I think what he does touch on all the time is that creativity, as you're boosting that as you age in any form. So, you know, people will quit piano or say, I can't do this anymore. I can't paint. Well, anybody can. You just have to allow yourself to do it. And then what it does is it actually creates new synaptic paths. And then that leads to other kinds of brain expansion.
And who knows what, because that's what creativity is all about. When you put together your salon, Gabrielle, who did you bring together? Who will people see and hear?
I was trying to bring together all the different arts together in a room, and people who may not have met each other before, and that the public might not have met before. And so some of the people are going to be storytellers, Joni Callum, Lynn Ford, Judy Dallas, educator and arts proponent Mimi Chenfeld, who a lot of people know and who's been on this show before.
Yep.
Ohio Dance's Jane D'Angelo, who's going to talk actually about a program they're doing of recording dancers who are older here in Ohio and keeping that art as a memory for people, and also use it to teach others, younger dancers as well. And then singer and painter Teenie Tucker, who's going to both improvise against digital art projection and share her work with us. Drag performer Lester Delavergian is going to do a performance. And me, I'm bringing Old Guy edited as a film version. So it's going to be a new version of the piece for people to share. And then painters, visual artists, Laura Sanders, Sonia Yenser, Luna Zamora, Deborah Dancy, and Nilda Quinones. And so this is a diverse and interesting age-ranging group of people. Their work represents that sense of creativity. It's not all on a, you know, if some of them are older, it's not just capturing what older people. It's showing all sorts of creativity that happens throughout different ages. And it's going to be really fun.
Some wonderful human beings you have there. That's so exciting.
Yeah,
wow. I want to go back to a mention earlier about the act of making art. And you mentioned a little bit of theater, painting, drawing. I think what's important for folks to understand is that, you know, we're not looking for the next Michelangelo. Whatever is created, whether it's a simple melody or a tune, it is art. It is perfect. It is beautiful. We have to realize that that's important to recognize that whatever comes out is beautiful and perfect in its own way. And so we were having a little bit of a conversation beforehand, Gabrielle.
And the people who are doing the art deserve to benefit from it as much as anybody who may be doing something that's whatever,
that's
Michelangelo.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
Well, it's all our human experience.
Right. Margaret? Mm.
Well, there's a wonderful story on YouTube by a photographer and painter named Tony Luciani about his 90-year-old mother. I guess he moved in with her or she moved in with him, and he was taking photographs, and she accidentally appeared in one of them. And then he decided to make her the subject of his photographs. Fine, good. She liked that. She enjoyed that. But then he gave her a camera. And she started making photographs. Now it happens, I agree with Jared, we don't have to have masterpieces, but it turned out that she had a wonderful eye. And there's I have a friend, a young friend who went to Nicaragua, where I go every year, and she gave a photography class to children in a village. And they'd certainly never seen a camera. They didn't have photographs, but she made up a course for them, which is a pretty standard course. They did, some of them, wonderful work, and we set up a show of it later. And I think you can put a camera in the hands of anybody, almost anybody, of almost any age, and just have them enjoy the immediacy of their representation of the world. And it is world making in a way that some of the other arts like painting and drawing are just much harder to do. So yes, I recommend, this is Tony Luciani, Luciani. If you wanna watch him on YouTube, that would be just such a treat. And he shows his mother's photographs as well as his photographs of her.
Margaret Morgenroth Gallette, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a delight.
My pleasure. Yes.
Margaret Morgenroth Gallette is an internationally known cultural critic and age studies, the author of numerous books, including the 2017 title Ending Ageism or How Not to Shoot Old People. She's a resident scholar at the Women's Studies Research Center at Brandeis University. Also, Jared Small, thanks so much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Jared Small is an arts learning coordinator at the Ohio Arts Council, where he manages the Creative Aging Training Initiative. It's a project to serve the needs of older adults. And Columbus-based filmmaker Gabrielle Burton, thanks for joining us again. It's great to see you.
Thank you, Anne. It's always wonderful to be here.
Gabrielle Burton took on ageism in the short-form comedy series Old Guy. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you want to see a film version of that, you can at an upcoming Columbus art event she is producing called OK Boomer Is Not OK. There's a link to that on our website as well. Thanks to the Allside staff, producer Aaron Esmont, producer Matt Rand, assistant producer Bobby Gerberick, video production by the Ohio Channel, board operation by Herb Howenstein and Scott Good. This is Allsides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.